Good afternoon, and welcome to the HSD podcast series. I'm here in Santa Cruz, California. I'm joined by my colleagues, Laura Franco and Blake Gilman. And today, we are going to be talking to some conference participants. We've got Zee Chambliss, Director of Nursing from Cypress of Charlotte. We've got Mo Jenkins, Director of Nursing from Greenwood Village South. Sarah Beltran, Director of Nursing from Walnut Place. Amelia Sadie, Director of Nursing at Blakehurst. And John Beck, Assistant Director at Marquette. We're going to be asking our panelists some questions about the conference today. So, Laura, I'm going to turn it over to you to start us off.
Okay, great. Thank you, Susan. So, Zee, you have been a participant in the past, and I know this year was a little bit more difficult in terms of travel. We had a lot of travel delays, a lot of turbulence, at least I know my plane did. And then when we got to California, we were faced with the mudslides and a lot of traffic backup. So we finally got here, and we now have day one under our belt. So I'd just like to get your opinion as a return participant. What do you think so far?
So far, I think the conference is going very well. I planned ahead for the travel because of the trip that we took, I think, 6 years ago in Texas, where the time change was a lot harder for me to adjust to. So I came on Saturday, this conference. So everything's going well, and I am enjoying it.
So Zee planned ahead, which isn't surprising at all. So Sarah, well, this is your first DON conference. We want to thank you very much for attending and participating and talk to you a little bit about some specifics of the conference. Being new, how was your experience with the vendor exposition last night? And did you learn anything about CPS?
Yes, I did. I have heard about CPS, but one of the things I came to appreciate yesterday is that there are options with CPS. All along, I thought that they would just recommend one brand of certain products. In my mind, they are driving towards volume of purchase, then that means they would just push for one brand, say one brand of wound care products. But meeting the different vendors yesterday that I considered to be competitors left me knowing that CPS will not force one product on me, but in fact will allow me to choose. And that left me with the knowledge too that someone has negotiated well in my behalf.
Well, Sarah, it sounds like you really did get some good out of the vendor group last night, and we want to thank our vendors because they really did come a long way, and they have sponsored this meeting, and they continue to do so every time we have it, so that was great. So now we're going to go over to John. So John, today we heard a lot about the final rule. We recapped phase one with some fun. We had some fun and games with phase one. And then we heard a bit about phase two, going into phase two. So after today and an intense day on phase one and phase two, how well do you feel you're prepared at your community, and how well is your community prepared to move forward with the final rule?
I shared with Blake last evening that I'm thankful to be in a company where we have resources provided to us ahead of time, that other companies aren't ahead of the game and providing us with checklists and resources. We receive not only checklists and summaries of the rule changes, but email updates. We have opportunities to join webinars, all those different resources. And so that helps us feel more prepared, even if we're not there yet. And we have our clinical nurse consultants who come out. Sandy, on her last visit, was reviewing policies with us. We looked at our grievance policy, updated that to reflect having a grievance officer. We also talked about listing our grievance officer in the place where we list those agencies that people can contact if they have concerns, so that they'll contact us first, hopefully, rather than just call the state or the ombudsman or someone else. So that was helpful. We also have our consultant pharmacist who just reviewed in our QAPI meeting, our quarterly QAPI. He took us through the pharmacy crosswalk of where we are and what we need to be doing. That was helpful. We have about 100% timely response of our pharmacy recommendations currently in our facility. Our pharmacist is great, and our physicians are really on board with that. We don't get a lot of pushback like you hear other facilities receive from their physicians. We have a 4% antipsychotic rate, and we have a behavior committee who reviews what we're doing with gradual dose reductions.
Wow, John, that's great.
Yeah, so we work hard for that, and the team is social worker, director of nursing, pharmacist. They make recommendations and they look at how those are going. So our MD is on top of that. We also, our nurse practitioner and medical director, they do a great job with antimicrobials and looking at eliminating those. We did talk in our quarterly QAPI meeting about how to improve those that are coming to us from the hospital. A lot of our antibiotics come to us, and we need to improve on either eliminating that if they don't need 20 more days of the antibiotic, or switching it from IV to PO. So we just discussed that in our meeting. So discharge summaries, we've talked about that, and including lab reports, MD progress notes, as well as our IDT summary. So that'll be helpful. So we've got a lot of things going there. With QAPI, like most facilities, we can probably improve. Personally, our QAPI process at Marquette is better than any place I've ever been. We do utilize it to drive change. We have, of course, we review falls and events and so forth, but we also review our quality measures in QAPI. We review our length of stay data, rehospitalization data, and our current PIPs. So we're working on it.
Well, I think Marquette is really on the nail on the head here, John. I think you've done a real good job, and I think you've done a real good job of recapping for us some of the things we heard today to reinforce. So, Blake, I'm going to turn it over to you.
So I just want to ask a question to the general group. You guys are away from your communities. You've been gone and will be gone for as much as a week here in Santa Cruz. When you're gone, who's running the ship when you're home, and how much concern do you have about things falling apart when you're gone, getting a vacation in Santa Cruz, California?
So, Blake, I see Mo raising her hand here. So, Mo.
So, I think that's a very loaded question. We all hire good teams. We all strive to educate our teams. However, as DONs, we are all very type A. So I'm sure we're surrounded by a room full of nurses who do not want to be away from their communities, who, no matter how good your team is, you're distraught to be away from your building. Because if you're not doing it, it might be getting done, but it's not the way quite you would do it. Because we're all control freaks, and that's why you have us, and that's why we get things done. So, while it is very awesome to be here in California, I've never been to California before, so it's definitely not what I expected up here in Northern California, but it's wonderful to have a break, because as a DON, you just have to, if you're a good one, which I think all of us around here are, you put your life into it. But we're all still connected. I know that I looked around the room today and we're all still connected to our buildings. In particular, I was doing payroll this morning. So there's that. But we hire good teams for a reason. We trust our teams. But it's not like having us. So we're still connected. So there's always a bit of angst with leaving. However, the goal of being an effective director of nursing is having a team that can run the ship when you're gone. So
I think that's a great comment. If you build a strong leadership team, you can walk away once in a while, get a vacation, get some air and a little bit of rest, and it goes a long way. Is there anyone else that wants to comment?
Well, this is Susan, and I noticed we had two DONs actually leave the conference today because they had survey in their building. So, it'd be hard to stay back knowing the surveyors are in there. So we learned today that future surveys will entail looking at staff competencies. this is a big deal. I just wonder if any of you have any thoughts on the final rule regarding staff competencies.
Yes, staff competency in relation to the final rule is to ensure that staff have the traits, skills, or attributes to perform their jobs effectively. And the skills can be tested either individually, where you can have one-on-one skill assessments, or you can have a group skill assessment by conducting skill fairs for employees with different like stations and stuff where you can test their nursing skills or abilities. There is also some benefits to having competent staff. And some of the benefits that a competent staff will provide is that they will be able to give quality care to the residents, and also they will be able to improve the quality ratings for the facility, and that will help to decrease litigations to the facilities by the families or the residents.
Great comments, Amelia. Thank you.
I agree completely. I think to piggyback on that is the competencies are very important. And, you know, in my facility and in most facilities, they haven't been required, but they've been suggested or assumed that they've been completed. However, we all know that maybe that wasn't documented so much. So it's great to show that we're actually going to be documenting that and going through all those processes. But we've really been focusing on how do we accomplish this? How do we accomplish it for a nursing staff that is so great? And, you know, we have a pretty good PRN base as well. So, and also going through the slides or in-services that we've had today, talking about consultant staff. So, you know, it was an aha moment for me today thinking about hospice staff and, you know, more ancillary staff home health or contracted staff, I guess is what I'm trying to think of, to include them in that. So that was kind of a moment for me thinking, oh my gosh, I have to think about the home health or the hospice staff coming in as well, because the sitters or the home health, you know, if they're HHA or non-licensed or non-certified, we don't allow them to do anything. So I don't worry about them, but it's the, and fortunately we don't use the agency. However, if we have hospice staff coming in giving baths, we need to make sure they're competent of that. So we've actually been formulating a plan to hold a competency fair, hopefully, you know, right at the beginning of our survey window, and be able to hold a whole fair for a week and include all the different disciplines, you know, dietitian for internal feedings, diets, different things like that, social services for resident rights and abuse, and really incorporate not only the skills, but put some thought behind it. You know, I kind of refer to them lovingly as head shrinkers, because they think as a different brain from us. And that is very important. Everybody has different personalities, and you really have to utilize all those skills that you have in the building to be able to function as a team and to be able to function holistically. So
I would follow up on that and say, I think competencies, what you're hearing from everybody, are a recognized concern. We know that we need to be doing them, but sometimes you feel like you're moving from plan of correction to plan of correction. You know, you have your nurse consultant visits, you have your mock surveys, you have your actual surveys, and then you're hiring new staff, so you're really focused on basic protocols, policies, LCS clinical programs. And so you talk about having a competency fair. And then when you sit down to look at it, you say, well, I have to develop all these competencies. If I'm going to do the competency fair, I have to develop all these competencies. So instead, what we do is we move from in-service to in-service, plan of correction to plan of correction, and we don't get around to doing the fair that we've been talking about doing for 2 years because of the work that goes behind it. That's part of the challenge.
And speaking of the challenge, we actually had a competency fair last year, which was the first one in Cypress of Charlotte history. We did it with our home health agency that's part of the Cypress, and then the nursing staff. And we actually made it a requirement for them to come in and get it done, or else they would not be able to work again. So we learned some challenges, things that we could do better, things that we need to improve on, skills that we probably didn't really need to have a hands-on experience. And one of the most important things is that we found that we needed to beg our administrator to buy us one of those $2,000 dummies so that we can practice. They actually have a geriatric one that we've asked for, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to get it.
Well, maybe after this podcast you will.
Well, I think we really hit the nail on the head with this competency question, because it's kind of like been the elephant in the room for a long, long time. Unfortunately, trying to find time to do something like that that's very important, now we're forced to from a regulatory standpoint. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing to move us forward. And tomorrow there's going to be a really good session on competencies. We're going to look for your input as we build competencies at LCS. So I was so happy to hear all of you really, really support that. So that's great. So I have one last question, and I'm going to shoot this question over to Sarah. So Sarah, there's been a lot of talk today also about staff empowerment and the value of our frontline staff. So I'm going to poise this at you first, and then if anybody else wants to jump in, please do. So the question is, how do you keep quality staff, and, you know, this whole staff empowerment, how do you approach that at your community?
One of the speakers today, Sandy, did touch about empowering staff to enhance customer service. Indeed, I personally believe as a director of nursing, staff empowerment is crucial. Empowering nursing supervisors and managers is the first step for me, knowing their personal philosophy and then ingraining in them the vision of the companies where I usually start with. Then together with the nursing leadership, we look at each one of our nursing staff and put them into one of two categories. Those who are eager to ride the waves and those who are scared about being empowered, for truly there are those who are scared of making decisions. Then we first work with those who are eager to ride the waves, and then together with those overachievers, we try to get those who are scared of being empowered to join us as well and not be afraid of making decisions. One of the lessons in empowerment I learned early on as a director of nursing is to allow the staff to self-schedule. To the nursing leadership team, that means more work and more analysis on how to make the schedules work. But that also means less call-offs, more reliability, and more stability. That to us means more positive energy that is brought to the team so that the residents can feel that same energy as well. Another thing that I've also done is in my monthly meetings with the nursing staff, I make it a point to emphasize that we're rolling out certain changes because of inputs from CNA James or Nurse John. And this doesn't mean, though, that I do not struggle with hiring and finding quality staff, but that is an altogether different issue.
Just to touch a little bit on that, staff empowerment is to have the staff have an input and control over their work and to openly share ideas and suggestions about their work. Staff empowerment can also be done by including the staff into some decisions being made by the director of nursing or the management team. And their suggestions can be very, very important at times. And sometimes you have to like weigh in on how important their suggestions are. Some of the benefits to empowering staff is that it improves productivity. It provides better customer service, and it embraces the staff into whatever changes that have been made by having them to cooperate with whatever the changes are, and, you know, being made sure that they work with the nursing staff or work with the management team in making sure that those changes are carried out.
All great points. Mo?
I think along with empowerment comes accountability, you know, and I know that I guess that hits on a little bit of a, I guess some people could say a negative note, but you know, it's it's rational and it's realistic. I kind of operate on the system of being fair and reasonable and consistent. And my staff may not always like me, but they respect me. So I really feel like if you're always liked, you're not doing your job. And if everybody hates you, you're probably not doing a great job either. So, you know, but they may not like you at the time, but they respect you. And I think that, again, with empowerment, I agree with, you know, the previous two DONs that spoke and saying, you know, involvement is the key. And, you know, for all those sports fans out there, you know, whoever you may be, if you read a book by Urban Myers, Above the Line, you know, it's all about the 10-80-10. If you have an opportunity to read the book, it's great. But, you know, convert the 80 with me. How do we do it? How do we turn the negative into a positive?
Yeah, at Marquette, empowerment is an interesting thing because we have a lot of staff who have been there for like 15, 17, 20 years. They certainly feel empowered because they've been around, and they know Marquette and they know their job, at least their basic job duties. And so when I started at Marquette and we started trying to implement systems and do the LCS clinical program, some of which that at that time had kind of gone by the wayside, there was some pushback at the pushback was either we don't want to do this or, well, when Susan Altman was here, we hear a lot of that at Marquette.
Yeah, come on now.
One of the things that's really been a strength for us, though, as a leadership team, is when we recognize that a system isn't working, it's easy to penalize the people that are a part of the system. But one of the things I think we often do well is give the staff the freedom to voice to us why it's not working. Sometimes it's things that we don't want to hear. Sometimes those are things we don't agree with their reason on. But it gives us an opportunity to sit down with them and say, well, how can we both get what we want? How can we meet this requirement and meet this goal without having it ruin your life as you perceive it's currently doing? That's helped us move past some barriers and get systems in place in a way that works for the staff. And I think they, over time, that empowers them to come to us and say, hey, this isn't working. And they feel the freedom to do that. They may not always get the answer they want, but they do have the freedom to come and say, this isn't working. How can we change it? Or when we do make a change that they don't like, they say, how can we find middle ground? And I think them just having a voice goes a long way, that they have the freedom to come and say that. Even if they don't always get what they were looking for, they know they're going to get an honest answer, and we're going to work with them on how to meet the requirement, put the system in place, and leave them in a place that they feel valued.
Well, you've got a great staff there, John, at Marquette. You really do. So tomorrow, or it might be even on Wednesday, we have a staff engagement session that I think that we'll continue to talk through things like this. So I think it's time to wrap up now. I want to thank you all for joining us, and thank you all, the listeners, for listening to us. We're having a great time here at the DON Conference, and we'll do another podcast tomorrow and give you an update. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Legal disclaimer. LifeCare Services, LLC, is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.